Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station on one of the hottest Wednesday afternoons of the year so far. That should not dissuade you, however, from seeking out great entertainment, and you have a couple options today. For instance, right after this radio show, and I'm sure not until after this radio show, you may feel invited to head over to Davis Farmers Market. There will be musicians there, and most likely, if you're a Davisite, a whole bunch of your friends enjoying the fine, fresh produce and the company of far-flung comrades. And then, tonight, at 8:30, on the patio of Bistro 33, perhaps the most popular patio in Yolo County, there will be poetry. Yes, at 8:30 tonight, Doreen Jeanette, who's appeared on this radio show a number of times and who is a stalwart of area poetry, some of you know her as a realtor, tonight she'll be reading her verse. Doreen Jeanette has a prize-winning book out, Urchin to Follow, and she'll be reading from that tonight. She'll be opening for other poets this afternoon who will be joining us as well at Bistro 33. Well, who's going to be joining us today? None other than Joyce Maynard. Joyce Maynard, you may know because she's been on the literary scene for the last 40 years, ever since she was featured in a New York Times headline, New York Times Magazine cover story, on her when I believe she was a freshman at Yale, to her many books, some of which have been made into movies, including To Die For. Well, she always does a lot of work with students and budding writers in different communities south of the border and in New England. She's going to tell us about that and about her latest projects. And then in the second half of the program, we will hear from a poet, Jeffrey Mackey, from Montreal, who has a radio show where he talks about literary topics. We'll be going north of the border to talk poetry with Jeffrey Mackey, and that'll be in the second half of the program. So Joyce Maynard, jazz, and Jeffrey Mackey, the sort of high quality that you've come to expect from everybody's favorite poetry and technology program. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thank you. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS. I was alluding before to the fact that Poetry Night is tonight. If you go over to poetryanddavis.com, you'll see that Doreen Jeanette is opening for Simmons Bunton. We're very happy to have Simmons in town this evening reading at Bistro 33 on the patio at 8:30 p.m. tonight. Simmons Bunton is the author of two books of poetry, Riverfall and Bloom, both published by Ireland's Salmon Poetry. Riverfall was published in 2005, and Bloom, his new collection, was just published last year. He's published poetry and prose in a variety of publications, from Japan's Kyoto Journal to the leading magazine of culture and place, Orion. He's won an Academy of American Poets Prize, Colorado Artist Fellowship for Poetry, and grants from the Arizona Commission on the Arts and the Tucson Pima Arts Council. He's also the founding editor of Terrain.org, a journal of the built and natural environments. So that'll be Simmons Bunton reading tonight at 8:30 on the patio of Bistro 33 here in the city of Davis, 226 F Street, Simmons Bunton. Doreen Jeanette will be opening for Simmons Bunton. Jeanette won the National Poetry Review Book Prize, and the National Poetry Review Press came out with her book, Urchin to Follow, last year, also in 2010. Her poetry has won a number of prizes, and she's very active in the Sacramento Davis poetry communities. My name is Dr. Andy. I'm very happy to have you here. I'm very excited to introduce you all to my first guest this afternoon. Her name is Joyce Maynard. Joyce Maynard first came to national attention with the publication of the New York Times cover story, An 18-Year-Old Looks Back on Life, in 1973, when she was still a freshman at Yale. I had, I bet, much less to look back on at 18 than Joyce Maynard did. Since then, Joyce Maynard's been a reporter and columnist for the New York Times, a contributor to the CBS program Spectrum, a syndicated newspaper columnist whose domestic affairs column appeared in over 50 papers nationwide, and a regular contributor to National Public Radio and national magazines, including Newsweek, The New York Times Magazine, Forbes, Salon, San Francisco Magazine, U.S. Weekly, and many others. She's also, in addition to being an established journalist and columnist, she's also an author of many books, including the novel To Die For, and the best-selling memoir, At Home in the World. Joyce Maynard makes her home in Mill Valley, California, so not too far away, and she's also spent some time in Davis and written about some of that time in Davis, I believe in novelistic form. Her novel, The Usual Rules, a story about surviving loss, has been a favorite of book club audiences for all ages and was chosen as one of the 10 best books for young readers for 2003. Her personal essays appear in numerous collections, including Dirt, Mr. Wrong, Bad Girls, Going Hungry, and Because I Love Her, among others. Her most recent novel is The Good Daughters, and I'm very pleased to introduce her to all of you. Joyce Maynard, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Good to be talking with you, Doctor.
Same here. And
this is a sort of last-minute doctor's appointment, but I'm thrilled that we could work it out.
I'm glad I could squeeze you in between appointments.
I should explain to your listeners, we're Facebook friends, and I love it that you just emailed me this morning and said you want to come on the show, and I'm always, you never have to twist my arm to talk.
Excellent. Well, and you had just plugged something, so let's orient folks at home. You had just plugged something that you're doing this summer in New Hampshire, I believe.
Yes.
And let's say this at the end, but let's also say it in the beginning. What are you doing in New Hampshire, and why might people be interested?
Well, I always go there. I believe New Hampshire is the absolute best place to be in the summer. I happen to come from there. But in addition to writing my own stories, fictional and memoir, I've for many years loved to teach writing, and my favorite form to teach is the memoir, although I teach fiction as well. I've run workshops for years in a little village in Guatemala that's also very close to my heart. But this summer I'm going to be teaching a week-long workshop with a really wonderful writer and friend fiction writer Bob Bausch, and on an island just off the New Hampshire coast, exactly where people in the hot Sacramento Davis area want to be.
Absolutely.
In August. So I happened to mention on my Facebook page, as you know, that there was one place remaining, and it just seemed a shame to see that go to waste. So I thought I'd mention it to my Facebook friends, and now I'm mentioning it to the people in Davis, which happens to be a favorite town of mine.
I want to say something about that, but let's say something about Bob Bausch. I'm related to about 30 Bausches that are all buried in a graveyard in Beavertown, Pennsylvania. So I've followed his career because I figure that he and I are distant cousins. Why don't you say something about him and why you're looking forward to working with him this summer in New Hampshire?
Bob is a wonderful fiction writer in his own right, and we've taught together a number of times really happily. So you get two for the price of one at this workshop. And there's an enormous amount of personal attention to everybody's manuscript, and we both sort of run craft talks. But, you know, one of the things that I've learned from years of teaching is that the fact that a person is a terrific writer does not always make them a great teacher.
Right.
Or a generous teacher. And Bob is both of those things. And I hope I am, too. I think I am. I am the daughter of two teachers, and I always hear my parents' voices on my shoulder when I teach. And they were my big teachers of writing. So it's a hugely inspiring week. Whenever I teach, we pack an awful lot into that week, and it happens to be in one of the most glorious spots you could possibly be.
Wonderful. If we wanted to find out more, is there a website that we should
go to? There is. It would be my website, joycemaynard.com, and you could see pictures. One of the things I love about this island, Star Island, where we'll be gathering for the week in August, is that it is so little has changed about it. I first went there for Unitarian Youth Camp in 1965 and didn't go back until last summer, and it was exactly the same.
How wonderful.
About many places. So you just sort of drop down in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean with lots of birds and water and writers. So, yes, I thank you for giving me a chance to tell people about it. And even if you can't come to this one, I teach pretty regularly in Mill Valley, a shorter day-long workshop, and I'm always eager to meet up with new writers. It's very inspiring for me to work with other writers on their work at any level, beginners up to, you know, sort of MFA student types.
Excellent. Well, and joycemaynard.com is the website. And Joyce, how do you pronounce your last name? Because I've always said Maynard, but I think you
Thank you for asking, because, you know, my father was very particular about this. I'm a lot faster on the subject, but it's Maynard.
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 All right, good.
And my father was British, and he took language very seriously in all kinds of ways. And I'll answer the Maynard.
Well, I think there are many words that emphasize the second syllable with the British pronunciation versus the first in the American way. So let's all remember your British father and say Maynard when we're speaking.
Okay, again. Thank you.
Well, so you told us a little bit about some of your teaching projects, and obviously those are connected to the sort of writing that you most love to do. I said that The Good Daughters was your most recent novel. I'm wondering if you could say something about that and some of the other writing projects.
Well, actually, it was my most recent novel until about a week ago. I just finished a book, which...
Congratulations.
...has been out, but I'm really excited about it. And it's... in general, my fiction... Although I've lived in California now for 16 years, I continue to set my fiction in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think my roots are just so deep there. And so the stories that come to me tend to be New Hampshire stories, with one notable exception, which is the novel that a portion of which is set in Davis, as I guess you may know. But for the first time, I set an entire novel in California, in Marin County, where I live, although it's still... the Marin County of some years back. I discovered that I think I tend to set my fiction a few decades back because I really don't like writing about computers and email and cell phones. So this is a novel set in the 70s, but you can't buy it yet, so I guess I should be talking about the ones that you can. Good Daughters comes out in paperback this summer, and Labor Day before that is out in paperback now, so that's probably the most sensible purchase for a budget-conscious reader, which would be a person like me. And I'm very partial to that one. And happy to say Labor Day is going to be made into a movie.
That's wonderful.
I think the movie will be good, but, you know, the book is always the best.
Of course. To Die For instance, is a highly regarded film with actors who have gone on to either win Oscars or be nominated for them. And so many people who don't know your work well might think first of that book that was made into a movie. The book Labor Day is going to be made into a film. Is that something where you're all of a sudden getting good news from your representation, or are you in ongoing discussions with people? How does that process work?
We've been sort of hanging around as a possibility for some time. But as every writer knows, you know, there's the ratio of producers and directors expressing interest in your work and the work actually getting made into a film is, you know, pretty high or low, however you say it. But
right.
It looks like this one really is going to happen. And there's a great cast and a great director, Jason Whitman, who made Up in the Air and Juno. So I'm thrilled about that. I'm not writing a screenplay, but I think it's... When I write, I'm always almost describing a movie that I already see in my head. So I think partly because of that, my books tend to lend themselves pretty well to film. I'm saying this is the only one that's been made into a film, but so I think Labor Day would be a natural, and I think Good Daughters would be a great movie, and I think this new one that I wrote, which is called The Little Sister, I could really see the movie. When I wrote it very fast, I think, because I was almost seeing the movie before my eyes, and just I couldn't type fast enough to describe this movie.
What a great feeling. I think
it was.
A lot of your readers and a lot of readers of other people's work, fictional work, I think also see movies in their heads. And it goes back to, you had talked about the negative or interrupting effect of, say, email and cell phone technologies. Well, this is a technology that has provided, I guess, a frame for a lot of the ways that we think about fiction as we're enjoying a book.
You know, I'm of that generation for sure. I mean, my literature was film and television in many ways, but I love film and I'm kind of a visual person. So I see scenes. My original dream for myself was to be an actor and then I wanted to make movies and be a director and in many ways, I feel in the line of work, the very lucky line of work that I've been able to practice for the last almost 40 years now, kind of following things to say, I get to be all of those things. I'm the movie star, I'm the screenwriter, I'm the director, I'm the camera person and the lighting person and the film editor and even the person who scores the movie because I'm always thinking about the music. But I don't have to come up with a $100 million budget, you know.
Right. Well,
lucky for a writer.
Novelists certainly, you know, they have great power over the worlds that they imagine, and it's neat that you can approach that from so many different levels. Let me remind folks at home that Joyce Maynard is my guest, and she is teaching some writing workshops with Bob Bausch this summer in New Hampshire. If you want to find out more about that, you can visit JoyceMaynard.com.
I've been in Mill Valley, too. In fact, if you visit my website, I urge your listeners to register your email. You won't be put on any horrible spam list, and nobody's going to write to you and say that they're stranded in Nigeria and they need funds wired. At least if they do, it won't be because of registering at my website. But, but if you register, then whenever there's a workshop happening here in Mill Valley or somewhere closer to home for Californians, you'll hear about it in a very gentle way. And I have so many good readers up in your area, I think because the Sacramento Bee used to run my column years ago. And it's one of the reasons why the Sacramento Davis area is close to my heart, because the Sacramento Bee at one point dropped my column. They dropped my column, I believe, when I got a divorce. And a lot of newspapers, this was 1989, dropped the column, because in those days that seemed like a really shocking thing to do. And the readers of the Bee were so insistent, so indignant that this had happened, that they wrote in sufficient numbers that the Sacramento Bee reinstated their column. So I'm always ready to go an extra distance for Sacramento. I also happen to have my all-time favorite bookstore to give a reading at was in Davis. You probably know it. I'm afraid it no longer exists, but it was Bogey's.
Yeah, and we all miss Bogey's. It's the home of a game store now. But it was a wonderful bookstore. We have...
And you could bring your dog.
Absolutely. We've got two independent used bookstores left in Davis, as well as the Avid Reader, which holds a number of readings, which sells new books, but is also an independent, locally owned bookstore. So we still...
I always put in my plug for those independents. They, you know, it's such a hard thing to be an independent bookseller these days. And I know Mark Nemers, who ran Bogey's, you know, really loved that store and put so much into it and wanted so much to keep it alive for Davis, but it's very hard to be an independent bookseller and survive.
It is. It's difficult to make that into a money-winning proposition. It's, at times it may seem more like a cause. And I mention that in part because I've been a subscriber to your mailing list for a while, and not only have you talked about upcoming workshops, but you've also talked about different causes that have been important to you. And I'm wondering if you could say about that and just a little bit about your travels to Guatemala where you've taught.
Well, there's sort of two separate questions, but years ago... I grew up with a mother who was a really wonderful baker. And my mother used to say, all through my growing up, she also kind of struggled with her weight. She was just always a few extra pounds and wished she wasn't. And she used to always say, if I ever get a brain tumor, I'm not going to count calories. My mother was a gloriously sturdy, healthy woman until she got a brain tumor. And when she did, at the age of 66, I decided that I would take care of her well for what is the last summer of her life, and that she shouldn't count calories. So I baked a lot of pies for her because she loves pie, and she was a great entertainer, so her friends kept coming over to eat the pie with her and sort of say goodbye. And it was the summer of 1989, and her friends kept on asking me for the recipe for her pie. And as any of your listeners who are good bakers out there, no, it's not about the recipe. The recipe is always the same. We're talking about crust, first of all, not the filling, because the filling is pretty much of a no-brainer. But it's not about the recipe. It's about how you handle the dough, and you can't read it on paper. You need to see a good baker, which is why I know how to do it, because I'm the daughter of a good baker. So I started teaching my mother's friends that summer that she was dying, which was very comforting to me, how to make her pie. And after she died, which coincided with death of my marriage, actually, that fall, I found great solace in making pie and teaching people how to make pie. And I started hosting gatherings of people, first friends, and then when I came to California, I didn't really have any friends yet, so total strangers at my house, and teaching them how to make pie. And I decided that I would use this as a platform for raising money for causes I believed in, which tended to be candidates that I were sort of beleaguered and having an uphill battle. And so I baked my way through a couple of George Bush elections unsuccessfully, but we did our bit, and it felt good at least to be trying. And I've continued over the years. I've taught hundreds of people pie in my kitchen here in Mill Valley. And anytime something happens that I particularly want to get involved with, most recently it was I taught 50 people here how to make pie for Partners for Health, Paul Farmer's group in Haiti. But, so that's how I use pie.
That's great. great.
It's not my source of livelihood, but it's a very important part of my life, actually.
And a great way to marry community to causes that you care about because of all the socializing you get to do over pie.
Although I don't believe you can learn how to make a good pie just on a piece of paper, my novel Labor Day features a character, kind of an unlikely character to do this. He's a convict on the run. He's an escapee. But he's being harbored by a woman who kind of falls in love with him. Not real kind of about it, actually. She does, and he falls in love with her. And he teaches her son how to make a pie. And the instructions for my pie crust are absolutely conveyed in that book, out of the mouth of this escaped convict. So if you can't make it to one of my pie gatherings in Mill Valley, that you have struggled with your pie crust issues, then that's another good reason to pick up Labor Day.
Excellent. Labor Day, available in independent bookstores, as well as, I'm sure, online, a book by Joyce Maynard. Well, Joyce, exactly the sort of giving energy that we sense over the radio this afternoon is something that I've really enjoyed in our emails, but also from being on your email list. So I encourage folks, if you're interested in that, to head over to joycemaynard.com and to add yourself to the mailing list.
Facebook page, I should say. Right now, I'm a little more active on Facebook these days, but either way, it's a way of staying in touch, and I love that. My only complaint with the line of work that I've been lucky enough to be in all my adult life is that it's not particularly sociable, and I'm a very social person, and I miss connecting with readers. So that's why I teach. It's one of the reasons why I teach. And I love that aspect of social media, although the first thing I did when I went up to the Russian River to write and finish this novel of mine was to disconnect because it's death to the writing process. But when I'm home living my regular life, I check in every day on Facebook and I love to hear what's going on.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad that we could hear it right from you this afternoon. I know that you'll have a busy summer with lots of new friends. And tell us again when your next book, which I think you called, you're titling The Little Sister, when will we be?
Now it's called The Little Sister. Well, I only finished it about 5 days ago.
Okay.
So it has to be, somebody has to decide to publish it first.
Right.
But I'm hoping it'll come out next year.
Excellent.
And I never take that for granted, least of all in these times, but I feel really good about this book. I like it a lot. The Good Daughters will come out in paperback this summer, and Labor Day is in paperback now.
Excellent. We have lots of choices.
You know, I cannot have a conversation like this, which is such an enjoyable thing for me, without also mentioning the book that in some ways is always going to be closest to my heart because it's my story, and that's At Home in the World, which is the story of my coming of age and growing up and becoming a writer and finding my voice and some hard things, too. That book, of course, can be found. You probably won't find it at a bookseller. You have to order it online, but it's a book that I always love to pass on to people.
I saw you speak on that book and on the craft of memoir writing at the San Francisco Writers Conference a number of years ago. And I found that really moving, and I've been thinking about my own memoir ever since, and I'm beginning to at least incubate the opening chapters.
I love to hear that. Well, maybe you should take a workshop. Come down some Saturday. And, you know, it's interesting. There's usually the typical makeup of one of my workshops. When I do an all-day memoir workshop, it'll be 7 women, 1 man. It's a man... The man is always a great man.
Excellent.
That. So,
well, that sounds like big shoes to fill, but I'd like to do that. I'd have to engage
in...
It would be fun. It would be fun for me,
too. Fun is probably not the best way to describe those dates. They're very intense. I like to think they're life-altering. But people kind of, you know, just are so exhausted when it's over, but it's always... an extraordinary day. And the week, of course, imagine 7 days of this on an island in New Hampshire. My God. Luckily, we'll have wine to sustain us and Maine lobster.
Not everyone knows that New Hampshire has islands, so, you know, one should go just for that.
New Hampshire only has 11 miles of seacoast, and they put a nuclear power plant on one of those miles. But the rest of the seacoast is pretty glorious, and this island is just about the best spot to be.
Wonderful. Well, Joyce Maynard, it's been a pleasure to speak with you again. And I hope it's as productive a summer as you can make of it. And we will keep seeing your name and your face appear on books this summer and beyond into 2012. And I hope we'll have more conversations about those next projects as they come out.
I would love it, Andy. Really good to talk to you.
Same here. Take care now.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019. Or via email at root@lugod.org.
We're enjoying jazz by the Knitting Factory this afternoon. This festival sampler is titled What is Jazz? We're listening to the second track called Walking Mystery Man, which has been one of my many nicknames in this life. My name is Dr. Andy, and I'm the host of this radio show, Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I'd like to remind you that tonight is Poetry Night in the city of Davis. It's true. Simmons Bunton will be reading. He is the founding editor of the journal Terrain.org. It's a journal of the built and natural environments. He's the author also of two books of poetry, Riverfall and Bloom, and has been a winner of the Academy of American Arts Poetry Prize. Opening for Simmons Bunton will be Doreen Jeanette. Her essays, poems, and reviews have appeared in journals such as Puerto del Sol, The Journal, Ninth Letter, Coconut, and the Los Angeles Review. Her work has also appeared in a number of anthologies. Her most recent book, Urchin to Follow, was published in 2010 by the National Poetry Review Press and won the National Poetry Review Book Prize in 2008. Doreen Jeanette will be opening for Simmons Bunton tonight on the Bistro 33 patio at 8:30 this evening out on the patio so that we can enjoy this fine summer July weather. I'd now like to introduce you all to Jeffrey Mackey. Jeffrey Mackey is on the live line from Montreal, Canada. He's been published widely both in Canada and internationally, and has had a piece on display in New Westminster City Hall. His poetry has also been translated into Croatian. His latest collection is Truth Among the Obsessions. He also does a literary feature on CKUT Radio in Montreal. So I'm very pleased to welcome another poetry and radio guy, Jeffrey Mackey. Welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you here. So give me a sense of some of the work that you do with poetry and other literary arts on the radio. I think you have more than an hour. I've just got an hour once a week. And is it an interview show? Is it a news and comment show? Do you play recordings? How does it work?
It's a little bit of everything. It's part of the morning show, which is called the Tuesday Morning After. And I actually have about a 15 to 20 minute segment in there.
I see.
And what I focus on is mainly local authors, Montreal authors, but a lot of times published authors, people with books out, people who will be reading at different events around the city, and but also in connection with some of the festivals that we have going here, like the Blue Metropolis Literary Festival, which is an international festival. So I have also had national and international writers on the show, and I attend things like what is called, I guess it would be similar to the Pulitzer Prize, is the Governor General's Awards, and when those are given out, those are national awards, and I have some of the top writers who have won those on my show. So I also feature fiction and nonfiction in addition to poets who come onto the show. I have them read for about 10, 12 minutes, and then they read for about 5 minutes from a selected passage, and they usually let the author choose what passage they would want to read that day and how it exemplifies their work.
That's great. How would you characterize the Montreal poetry scene?
I would say that, and I think this is probably true for many other cities. I know this was true when I lived in Vancouver, in the sense that there are scenes.
Right.
You have people who might be doing something that would be more along the lines of spoken word. You have other people maybe doing more performance, even relating it, bringing in props or acting, and then you have sort of what might be considered straight ahead literary poetry, and those kind of, and there's different reading series that sort of appeal to people who are into the different genres, but I think there's one called the Yellow Door, and the Yellow Door is a coffee house / performance space. It's been around since the 1960s here in Montreal. It's on the McGill campus, in the McGill student ghetto. And from legend has it, I think that even Leonard Cohen played acoustic guitar back in the day there.
Oh, that's great.
But Alona Martonsi, who hosts that series, she gets a mix of people from different performance types and what have you, and she includes music in the evening, sort of spacing out the readers, and I think that's been one of the popular series over the last 10 to 12 years, in that sort of melange, if you want, of different styles and people meeting from different backgrounds, and it's a space where it's small enough where readers end up chatting with the audience and with each other after the reading.
Good, good. If you're just joining us, Jeffrey Mackey is my guest. He's a Montreal poet. I had mentioned before that you had a piece on display in New Westminster City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you've read or written other political pieces that might be quite controversial if someone were to put them up on a city hall. And can you tell us a little bit about your own poetry and your approaches to poetry?
Yes. One of the pieces of mine, it's actually available on YouTube. It was recorded as a piece. It was called Truth Among the Obsessions. And it actually, nicely enough, got called a present-day howl, which was, quite a compliment. But it was looking at, from a Canadian perspective, what was going on. And it was originally written around 2003, 2004, but then it ultimately got published in book form and then in a performance in about 2008, 2010. And what it really did was look at, why the world was at war, what were some of the trends that were going on, but also that I was taking a look at things from my own perspective, in the sense that even we all become consumers in no matter what sort of stream we follow, that there's a tendency sometimes to imbibe too much negativity about what's going on in the world and to really not look to the greater good. and to continue to hope, and that's what I was really trying to press through. It's an 8.5-minute piece, and it goes, it has many different sort of themes and cadences throughout it. But what I really wanted to do at the end was to take the listener or the reader to some of the things that are going on, asking questions, having them reflect, and also trying not to sort of have this progressive, conservative, or whatever. Us and them, but that we're all part of the thing without, you know, becoming too blasé about it, but that, you know, that we still want to struggle, but at the same time to look at what's going on in our world, but not to sort of rest in it and not to get too so depressed that we don't do anything and we become cynical and to try to I've noticed those tendencies even in myself, that sometimes that everything you talk about was, you know, something negative rather than a positive goal to go forward. And that's what I wanted the poem to take the reader.
Right. Well, wonderful. It sounds ambitious and refreshing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Good for you. Well, I'd love to hear a sample of your work. Do you have something there that you could share with listeners at home?
Yes, I do, actually. I have something fairly recently, and some of the things that I've been doing now, I don't know if it's because I'm getting a little bit older, but I have been sort of reflecting or having a bit of nostalgia, and that's actually what this poem ends up being called. And it's just looking back on the things that have passed through my life as I've gotten a bit older, and the neighborhoods that maybe have disappeared, or, you know, friends or family, or things that we really held on to. And one of the things that it does is it also talks about tangible objects and how we sort of forget that they sort of disappear through our life. And I'll just read it. It has, excuse me, many Canadian references, but I hope that it will translate.
Excellent.
And the poem is called Nostalgia. The green belt field and the frozen pond, Sunday closings and rotary phones, the Smith and Adams NHL divisions, sit-down family dinners have all but disappeared. And now that nothing is good and everything unreal, inauthentic, we want to bring it all back. No one is playing in the fields or on the rinks. No one is in the libraries, too captivated by television or the internet. I ask, what is the solution? A three-channel black and white universe? Recording songs on cassette recorders? Off the radio, the top 40? Should we shut down Google and buy a set of encyclopedias? I say we are destined to irony, brand name, authentic. Care for what you wish for. Care for what you want, what you wait for. You wait for a dial tone on the rotary phone, and there's no Facebook link on my Smith Corona. Walt Disney Sundays, I miss them, and the beachcombers, we're bathed and in our pajamas. Supper on TV trays. Now there's a steady click on your alarm clock, or the numbers unfolding, digital, transistor radio. And we were talking just the other day about Kmart, Miracle Mart, Dominion. Is it so bad to remember material objects and pop culture? In bookstores, they discuss television, but granted, on TV, they now recommend books. And somebody is playing solitaire at the cottage, and suburban silence and the steady thump of a tennis ball on a garage door. I'm in a towel and a housecoat, and I'm playing a shepherd in a Christmas play. And I want to goaltend again, but not this modern equipment. I want the old gear, my Cooper Trapper, a Hespeler, or a Sherwood hockey stick. Though you know you can't live in the past, I wonder what future. And everyone remembers a simpler time. Everyone here remembers a simpler time. And now everyone is looking out a window, looking out a vista, looking out for themselves. In a box you have letters, love letters, birthday cards, letters to Santa. And the arena is now a sports center named after someone famous who came from the area. And apparently there is nothing you can do that can't be done. And apparently there is nothing you can say that cannot be said. And apparently there is nothing you can do. Apparently you have to learn how to play the game. Thank you.
Oh, that's very nice.
Thank you.
In terms of poets who you admire or who have helped to shape your work, are there certain names that come immediately to mind?
Yeah, back a few years ago, he was a Canadian poet who was actually teaching here at Concordia University in Montreal, and he was Gary Geddes, and a lot of his poetry is very, very topical from a Canadian perspective, but he's written about China, he's written about Latin America, issues around when Nicaragua was much more in the news in the 80s. And so he was called Canada's political poet at the time. So I got into looking at his work. And later on in university and a few years ago, I also was very much influenced by, I think a lot of people end up having a beat phase or listening to the beats or hearing the beats, and it sort of energizes you and gets you into other avenues. So I would have to say that I definitely went through a period where I read and heard a lot of Allen Ginsberg, and actually ended up meeting him at NYU in the mid-90s. But and then some of the Russians and some of the futurists, like Vladimir Mayakovsky, people were doing experimental things, and I found that I also, a lot of my poems end up becoming long form, and these are people who influenced that in a sense. And I noticed that they were using that long form, and so it was a back and forth kind of. I was doing with that, and I saw that and how it could be done.
Well, that's great. And what else do you do in life as we know it? I'll tell you that my work here on behalf of this radio station has not earned me one dime over the last 10 years. So I bet you might be doing something other than radio and poetry to earn a living.
Yes, I ironically enough, I'm a bookseller.
Oh, great.
And, I've worked as a bookseller for about 12 years. I have also worked in politics and the New Democratic Party, which is a social democratic party in Canada, probably might be known in the California area. And in addition, I'm similar to the work, I imagine the work that you do at the station also lends itself to you getting more involved in some of the community, literary community, hosting things, being on judging committees. And so some of those things have also, I've ended up attending in that capacity, the Fringe Festival, the Blue to Metropolis Festival that I mentioned earlier, and such like that. But, my radio, I'm not paid for it. I'm not a paid employee. But I have done it for many, many years. And I believe built up a following. And it's also allowed me to meet and talk to many, many poets, artists, and writers from many different backgrounds, which has been really, really great.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons that one of the many reasons that I do this radio show is all the interesting people that we get to meet and get to interview and get a sense of a local poetry or literary scene, or as you say, multiple scenes.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that is there a multiplicity of scenes in the UC or the Davis area?
There actually is. We've got a great spoken word collective, which is really student-based, called Six Bits, which also attracts some spoken word poets from the Sacramento area. And those poets are very dynamic, some would almost say histrionic, but really confessional, brash, with lots of music mixed in and hip-hop dancing. And it's just, it's a lot of fun. It's a great, energetic monthly series that happens here on the UC Davis campus. And then I've plugged tonight a few times the Poetry Night reading series, which happens both at Bistro 33, which is our old City Hall building, mm-hmm. and also at our county's largest art gallery, which is the John Atsoulis Gallery right in downtown Davis. And those readings support traveling poets, but also feature a lot of the university-based poets who have taught in the area for years. And that's a lot of fun because, for instance, at Bistro 33, the restaurant, there are people offering like food and drinks, and there's an open mic with a stage. And that reading series has been voted the best open mic series for the last few years in a row. And then also the university has a number of poets come, and those are usually somewhat more elliptical or abstruse poets, more book poets, scholarly poets.
Mm-hmm.
But those are also welcome. And then we've got a bookstore in town, which is not much bigger than, maybe one and a half times the studio I'm in. But still, they move around a lot of shelves, and they have room for about, 25 people. And it's called Logos Books, and it's an independent bookstore. And they sell only donated books, and all of their profits go to charities. and they've started a reading series. So, and if you had to characterize the differences, I characterize the university-based readings as kind of more scholarly, more difficult, more substantive. The six bits readings are spoken word and kind of wild and woolly and a lot of stage poetry. And then I'd say the Poetry Night reading series brings a lot of established traveling poets as well as local favorites, often pairing a local poet as an opening act for an established or Bay Area or traveling, say, East Coast poet. So it's a great mix of poetry, and none of this is even touched upon the four or five reading series that are in Sacramento, at least a couple of which have a real urban feel with a three-piece kind of jazz blues band playing behind all of the performers, whether they're doing a monologue or poetry or whatever, singing or whatever the case may be. So a lot of variety, a vibrant Sacramento Poetry Center. It's really an exciting place to be with an accessible community, you know, perhaps not the history of Berkeley and San Francisco, but a lot of interesting work is coming out of resulting from these reading series and also small presses that have sprouted up here and there.
That sounds really vibrant.
Yeah. Well, I'm enjoying it, and I get to promote it and have all these folks on my radio show, so that's something I really appreciate, too.
I mean, that's one of the things that I've also learned from doing the radio show is the vibrancy and meeting people from the different communities and being able to also, at public functions, introduce people to other people who might be interested. And one of the other things is we have, because in Montreal, of course, we have a French-English. And one of the things is hopefully always trying to cross that divide. I mean, we have a lot of the events that I'm telling you about go on in English.
Right.
We have been mixing and having sort of bilingual readings, and those have been hearing people, even if people don't necessarily. There's a person named Elizabeth Robert who actually did trilingual readings with French, English, and Spanish, and. Even if people are there in the audience and they don't necessarily understand the language that's being read in, it's the feel and the sense of the words and the performance that is very important. And people go and they hear poetry in languages they might not understand, but there's an interaction between the different communities, which is really, really great. Because historically, you know, there has been a sort of French-English divide, even literary-wise, in the Montreal area. I mean, there are groups that look out for the English writers here, but it's really great when we can straddle the communities and have that interaction and hear what's going on in the language in a whole other part of the city. So one of the things, I don't know if that goes on in California among like Spanish and English and that kind of, or even people reading bilingual poetry.
We do. We've got a wonderful poet who teaches for our Spanish department named Francisco Alarcón. He's written a number of books, books for children as well as books for adults, almost all of them in bilingual editions. And he reads almost all of his poetry in two versions, in Spanish and English. And he brings a tremendous energy and flavor to local poetry scenes and wherever he goes. He's also been very active monitoring and taking part in protests against human rights abuses in Arizona and the sort of anti-immigration laws that have popped up in Arizona and other places in the Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
And people always come away from his readings with big smiles on their faces. And as you say, one can sense the energy and the mellifluous qualities of the music of languages that one doesn't understand. And when you hear the translation as well as the original Spanish, then it's a learning opportunity on multiple levels, as well as being emotionally very rich. So he's one of our local treasures, certainly.
One other thing, maybe if you have a blog or links, I can send you links about some of the Montreal events and that your listeners might be interested in. And also, right now, not a lot of reading series are going on per se in Montreal. The summertime's a little bit quiet here, But some of our magazines are also looking for, it's their call-out time and also some of their contest time. And if people would be interested in sending stuff to be for Montreal poetry magazines or lit journals, if that would be something that would be interested in.
Excellent. Well, let's connect via Facebook and email, and I'd like to share that with some of the people who are writing vociferously over the summer and are looking for new places to send their work.
Yeah, and the radio station I'm at is CKUT.ca on the Internet, and you click on the listen button. It's 90.3 FM if you are in the Montreal area.
And if you're in the Davis area, that number will be easy to remember because those are also our call numbers here at KDBS in the Sacramento Valley. So next time we're in each other's cities, we'll have to check out those radio stations.
Well, definitely.
All right. Well, Jeffrey Mackey, Montreal-based poet, published widely, does a literary feature on CKUT Radio in Montreal. It's been such a pleasure to speak with you this afternoon and hear some of your work.
It was great to connect, Andy. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
The Coalition for a Healthy and Active America is fighting a health epidemic, childhood obesity. But there is a cure. Eat right, exercise daily, and educate yourself on the causes and the cure. For more information, visit www.chaausa.org. Remember, get up and get active. Fight childhood obesity.
While we listen to experimental jazz, I'll tell you that some people, when they're snoring, it actually sounds like experimental jazz of the worst sort, the discordant sort. Loud snoring can be a warning sign for sleep apnea, in which the airways become blocked during sleep. An estimated 19 million Americans are afflicted with sleep apnea, and only 5% have been diagnosed. Of course, once the sufferer of sleep apnea is diagnosed, this condition can be treated very effectively and painlessly, but left untreated, and get this, sleep apnea can increase risk of heart attack, stroke, and depression. If you'd like for more information on home testing and sleep apnea, you can visit www.sleepsolutions.com or call 877-753-3776. An important message about sleep apnea. Well, I'm heading off to the farmer's market for a little bit before descending on Bistro 33. I'm going to have some dinner and then get ready to see two great poets. Who are they? Simon Bunton will be the headliner. He's written two books, Riverfall and Bloom. He also won the Academy of American Poets Prize. Isn't that impressive? He's the founding editor of the journal Terrain.org. And on the flyers that I've seen around campus and around town, he looks much younger than you would expect for someone so established and accomplished. Doreen Jeanette will be the opening poet for Simmons Bunton tonight. And this event takes place at 8:30 on the patio of Bistro 33 at 226 F Street here in the city of Davis. I'd like to thank my two guests who brought lots of welcome energy to this program, almost matching mine, Joyce Maynard, who very famously came to national attention as well as to the attention of some key American writers with the publication of the New York Times cover story, An 18-Year-Old Looks Back on Life. I've so enjoyed meeting Joyce on occasion at the San Francisco Writers Conference. And I'm really intrigued by the possibility of working with her on the memoirs that I'm percolating in my head. And Joyce Maynard, as she pronounced it, Maynard, or Maynard, can be found at joycemaynard.com. And then Jeffrey Mackey, the Montreal poet, who has a radio show, Truth Among the Obsessions. He does a literary feature on CKUT Radio in Montreal that you may want to check out. CKUT. Isn't it great that in this modern age you can pretty much check out anybody's literary radio show? Hope you had fun on the 4th of July. I certainly enjoyed the crowds and running into some friends that I know from poetry shows, from my classes, from my 21-odd years in this community out there at Community Park. I was there with my wife and three kids and Geneva, Jackson, and Truman. Jackson in the past has not been a fan of fireworks, but he did quite well this year. We are all proud of him and proud of ourselves that we biked and pleased that we didn't have to sit in all of that traffic. But it's always worth it, especially if you can bike over to the celebrations, those events for the 4th of July, the paragliders, the live music, Allegra Silverstein usually reading a 4th of July commemorative poem, an original poem by Davis's poet laureate, and all of the friends and picnics. I hope that you'll stick around because DJ Tangasaurus Rex is here in the studio and she's eager to share with you some reggae music and other fine selections. Thanks very much for listening into this radio show this afternoon. I'll see you next week with Brenda Hillman. Brenda Hillman has won a whole bunch of awards for her poetry. Brenda Hillman, check her out, if you care to, on Wikipedia. And I bet, I haven't confirmed this, but I bet at BrendaHillman.com. My name is Dr. Andy. Brenda Hillman next week. More poetry, technology, and jazz every week on everybody's favorite poetry and technology program. This is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. See you next week.